Today is November the 3rd, 1999. This will be a recording of the Cumberland Township Historical Society regular meeting that's being held at the meeting room at the Cumberland Library. Our guest speaker is Angus Wilson, a longtime resident of Cumberland.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I was asked to give a little bit of a story on the Wilsons and their importance in Cumberland or otherwise, I don't know which. My great-great-great-grandfather, William Wilson, was born in Dyke up near Inverness, so he was a real Highland Scot. His son Ralph, my great-great-grandfather, was born in 1753, as was his wife Christian Stenhouse. Both Ralph and Christian moved to Edinburgh from the Highlands when he plied his trade as a wagon wright. They married in 1780. Ralph's son John, who was my great-grandfather, was born in 1781. John Wilson became a grocer in Leith, which is the port for Edinburgh. Later on, he moved to Edinburgh proper. John married Margaret French in Edinburgh in 1805. When my great-grandfather's parents moved to Canada in 1816, they had six children. There is no record as to why they left Edinburgh, but at that time there was a great depression in the land, mainly due to the Napoleonic Wars. This may have been the reason. John settled near Montreal and shortly afterward moved into town and set up called a handsome store. I don't know. Anyway, John and Margaret had five more children after arriving in Canada, and the last being Thomas, born in 1825. My grandfather William was born in 1815, just before they left Scotland. John moved his family to Greece's Point, which is down near Grenville on the Quebec side, and became a merchant. In 1836, he was appointed Commissioner of Small Causes. I checked with a lawyer to find out what that meant, and he said as far as he could make out, it'd be a case of a man adjudicating adjudicating small claims, somewhat similar to our, what do we call it, the court now that we have?
Small claims court?
Small claims, yeah. John got involved in a legal dispute while he was in the Grenville area over the Grenville Canal, because some of the land that he was occupying was needed for the canal. So finally he lost the case, he went to court, he lost it. And then he moved up the Ottawa River to Cumberland. Great-grandfather John, then, while he was up in Cumberland, he lost another lawsuit with Sir Charles Stewart, who was one of the influential people in the area, over water rights on the Lièvre River across the Buckingham. He took the case as far as he could, which was the Privy Council in London, and he lost every case that he tried. This wasn't too hard to do, because at that time there was a powerful group of people who were able to bend the laws and everything for their own use. They were known as the Family Compact. Probably some of you in your history would have heard of it. Yeah. Ruggles Wright, the son of Philemon Wright, the founder of Hull, reported to Sir Charles Stewart that John Wilson, once he realized he'd lost the case, moved to Cumberland and built a large stone house. Ralph, one of my great uncles, was born in 1806. He had a farm in Buckingham Township, and according to a militia return, all of these fellows seem to serve in the militia. I don't know what they did very much, but anyway, they were there for that. They were there as, I guess, part-time soldiers. And he returned, and in the militia return around 1830, He was an ensign. Ralph moved to Cumberland Township in 1839 and settled in Lot 10 in Session 7, Cumberland Township. After a while, he bought Lot 24 in the same concession. This lot, Lot 10, is, for, as a lot of you know, is now owned by Garrett Rivington. The cemetery on the lot is known as the Wilson Cemetery, as was also the site of a Presbyterian church. Ralph was a justice of the peace and a captain in the 1st Russell Militia. Ralph was killed when he felling a tree in 1853, when he was 47. His widow then moved to Cumberland and had a shop. In 1862, she donated a small frame house pour le service protestant, according to Lucien Brou's History of Prescott and Russell. She died in 1873 and is buried in Cumberland, or in Dale Cemetery. Another of John Wilson's daughters, Margaret, born in 1808, married Nathaniel Blaisdell in Ottawa, or a bytown as was known then. Blaisdell, along with his brother Julius Caesar, operated mills in Chelsea and owned timber limits up the Gatineau. They also had a machine shop and a foundry in Ottawa where they made sawmill or sawmill machinery. She died in 1870 and is buried in Dale Cemetery. My great aunt, Christian Stenhouse Wilson, born in 1817, married J.M. Currier, who was born in North Troy, New York, or Vermont, in 1820 and came to Canada in 1837 to work in the lumber trade, both in Buckingham and then he moved to Bytown. In 1853 he set up his own lumber business and worked that until the late 1860s. About 1850 he became a partner with Moss Dickinson in a mill at Manitic that is still operating. And it was here that my great aunt was killed when her clothing got caught in the mill machinery. Last Saturday night, I was watching Regional Contact. I don't know if any of you saw it. There was a story about the ghosts of Manitic. And of course, one of them mentioned about, they possibly think it was Christian Stenhouse. She appears in the windows in the Manitic mill every now and then. J.M. Currier, he built 24 Sussex Drive, which everybody knows what that place is now, which later was owned by my uncle, Willie Edwards. And the story is that my sister told me that my Aunt Catherine, or Aunt Kate, the senator's wife, took a violent dislike to my mother. And so after the senator died, he changed the will after it was supposed to be left to my father. And as a result, we never lived in 24 Sussex. Robert Wilson was born in 1809, took over his father's store in the Grenville area, and then after his death, his son Robert T. Worked the store, or at least operated the store until he retired in 1882. James Wilson, born in 1813, left Grenville for Buckingham about 1840 and opened a store, also serving as the second postmaster for Buckingham. He served as a school trustee, a municipal councillor, and as well as mayor. The Mercantile Reference Book in 1865 reported the store was worth between $25,000 and $50,000. With a high credit rating. He died in Buckingham in 1877. My grandfather William Wilson, born in 1815, served in the militia in Grenville in 1838, and then moved to Buckingham with James, his brother, and possibly other family members. He was appointed Crown Lands Commissioner for the Township of Buckingham in 1846. We have no record of when he came to Cumberland. but the Canada Directory of 1853 showed a William Wilson, J.P., still living in Buckingham. In 1856, Lieutenant Colonel Archibald Petrie appointed my grandfather to a captaincy in the 1st Russell Militia. My grandfather was elected Reeve of the Township in 1857 and served as County Warden in 1863. He was postmaster for 10 years, beginning in 1881, till his death in 91. He also had the store attached to the west side of the old stone house, and across Queen Street, he had a sawmill and a gristmill. And down at the river, there was a wharf to bring in the supplies, as this was the main transportation route to the outside world. By 1881, Grandfather added lot 13 after it had been foreclosed by a Montreal mortgagee. With this lot, he owned 500 acres of land. In 1856, my grandfather had married Mary McElroy of Richmond, with this match resulting in 13 children. My father was the 13th. Unfortunately, several died young. Margaret Catherine, who I call my Aunt Kate, was born in 1859, married W.C. Edwards in 1885. As many of you know, Willie Edwards founded the town of Rockland when he set up his mill in 1868. He also built the town waterworks, the school, and the company store, and many houses for the help that worked at the mill. It took 900 men when it was operating in full blast and two ships to run the mill. My Uncle George, born in 1861, was a great chum of John D. McMillan, grandfather of Paul McMillan. And it was from John D. that I learned of some of their escapades. I won't mention them here. George became postmaster after his father died, or after his father and died in 1905. My Aunt Helena Wilson married Edward Archibald Petrie in 1894. She went to live on a farm of 600 acres, part of which is now owned by Lynn Vandenham. I expect the LaPorte nursery was also part of this farm. And I'm sure it's possible, it's very possible that the Petrie Island is named after this family. My cousin Ted Petrie, who became a radiologist down in St. John, New Brunswick, told me several times, he said, my father was no farmer. Yeah. Uncle Charlie, born in 1865, graduated in medicine from McGill when he was 20 years old, and they wouldn't give him a license to practice until he was 21. So Uncle Willie Edwards sent him off to Vienna to study orthopedics with a noted surgeon in that city. My father said he was a tough character and carried the stick all the time he was at McGill, which denoted that he was had beaten everybody that approached him in a fight down there. He was also strong enough that he could break bones that had been badly set just with his bare hands. Yeah, it was quite funny when I was in the army over in England, one of my chums, we were talking one day and he said, I know, I knew a Dr. Wilson out north of Edmonton at Clover Bar. Well, I wasn't sure where Uncle Charlie was. I knew he had a farm somewhere around Edmonton. So I wrote to Dad and he said, oh yes, he said he did have a farm there, and this man used to hunt with him. So he knew more about it than I did. Yeah. I only knew two of my aunts. One was Mrs. Petrie, Aunt Lena, we used to call her Aunt Lena, and Aunt Edith, who was born in 1872, but she never married. In my young days, she used to live nearby, so we used to see a lot of her. And also Aunt Edith owned the house at the corner of Peter Harkness Lane and Queen Street, which was rented for several years by the Harkness family and then sold to Irene Tucker. When Irene Tucker disposed of it, Peter Harkness bought it and lived there for some years. I should speak of my Uncle Ribbs, who is the next one to my father up the line. He was born in 1875, and he was the only uncle that I ever had any personal knowledge of. Uncle Ribbs and my father, they went to high school in Upper Canada College in Toronto, and then Uncle Ribbs went to Toronto University and then on to McGill, where he studied engineering, and he became an engineer for most of his life. My father went to the Ontario Agricultural College and graduated in 1896 with a degree of Bachelor of Science in Agriculture. When after college, he came back to the farm, and according to Wilfred Sharkey's father, he did all the stonework on the stable addition on the south side of the big barn. He was a good judge of horses and was ready to trade them at any time. He was a great lover of his Clydes, Clydesdales, and won many prizes with them at the local fairs and the Ottawa Winter Fair and exhibition. The coach house near the big stone house where my daughter and son-in-law have a weekend retreat was used to store the carriages and had a heated room for hanging the harnessing. The big barn that you can see from Queen Street had a horse stable on the second floor, and the horses reached that by going up the ramp at the east end of the big barn. There was a hayloft on top of that, and all the manure from the horses went down below into a big pen where the fat cattle and the pigs were kept. After my father operated the farm for a few years firsthand, he went to run the sawmill and farm owned by his brother-in-law, Senator Edwards. My father served as MP, which at that time included Gloucester and Osgoode townships. He always said they did that to balance out the heavy Liberal vote in Russell County. My father said it was a terrible job. At that time, patronage was terrible, and every job had to go through his office. And he said half the people that came in, he said, you couldn't employ anyway, but they all figured they were owed a job by the public service. When he was sitting in the house, he had McKenzie cake for a desk mate. It was while he was MP that he and my mother met at a ball at Government House. Mother used to come to Ottawa quite often with my grandfather Mackay, who had become a senator. She was a frequent guest of Lady Laurier at her house. The general store in Clarence, I don't know if many people know about it, was started by my great uncle Thomas in 1860. And the store was still operated by his son Arthur when I visited it in 1947. And Thomas, my great uncle, used to make the trip up to Cumberland every Sunday to attend the Presbyterian church service. It's quite a journey to do on a regular basis, I would think, because there was only horsepower then. I've been told that there were two hotels in Cumberland, one where Barrett's shop is now and the other on the site of John Watson's house. Both did a roaring business, so my father said, from township residents coming to pick up supplies. The first road going to the south part of the township was the lane between lots 12 and 13, which is the middle of our farm. It was closed by township bylaw in 1905. I expect then that was when the Nunney Road was built. Edwin Williams talks to me about the road that ran through the sugar bush on an angle, and you can still see it there, it's still evident. And he told me that his grandfather Somerville used to get to the village by this route. This involved opening and closing seven sets of gates. John Dunning's father, Leslie, told me that there was a boardwalk running from my grandfather's store to the village. And I had a picture of the store attached to the house, but I couldn't find it, so I couldn't bring it up. I guess Mrs. Nuttall would have been pleased if she'd been able to use that box. She's complaining there's none today. My father always talked of those people who lived on the front. In other words, those people were fortunate enough to have a river frontage, and could never understand when grandfather was relieved that the township hall was moved from between the White House and the Blue House on our farm back to Leonard. He also said that your grandfather, he always called him to me, moved the road from near the river up to in front of his own house. And skipping a few years, in 1925 and 1926, my father decided to almost rebuild the whole place. And he tore down the big barn and built it in steel beams. And he moved the horses to a wing on the south side of the big barn. Often there'd be 24 Clydesdales in there for the winter. And father, when they sold the Edwards cattle down in Rockland, they bought a lot of them and ran into a problem with TB, because they got the cattle mixed up and the TB came with the cattle. So then he had a novel scheme, I thought anyway. Well, I didn't know about the time, I was too young. He'd have a cow dropped where the TB infected cattle were, and he'd immediately take them to another barn and put them on a nurse cow. But still, it was about, I think, nearly 15 years before he had a clean herd. And on my maternal grandfather on the other side of the family, Robert Mackay, was a son of Angus Mackay and Euphemia Mackay, whose father, William Mackay, had been driven off the land in the Strath of Kildonan, which is way up in the north of Scotland. This was done by the Duchess of Sutherland, who was clearing the land off so she could rent it out to sheep farmers for more money than she made out of these poor crofters, as they were called, who only had holdings of about maybe 5-6 acres. And the English farmers were glad to get the land to pasture sheep on, which were, as the wool was very valuable at that time. William, after being forced off his land, and his wife Anne moved to Leinster, which was on the coast, in Caithness, which is up in the north part of Scotland too. My grandfather Robert Mackay was born in 1839 and came to Montreal in 1855. He joined his two uncles in the dry goods business, and eventually with his two brothers, they took over the business on the death of the older uncles.
Angus?
Yes?
I need to take a break, but I think this is a long speech you have prepared there.
Well, I hope it's not boring to everybody.
No, it's not boring. It's very, very interesting.
I can keep going all right.
You can keep going. Well, I'll tell that's okay.
I should have mentioned at the start that I have to give credit to Barbara Wilson, a distant cousin of mine. She did an awful lot of research on the Wilson family. She had lots of resources because I think she worked at the archives. I'm afraid I didn't have time, or I never had time to do all this digging around.
It's very, very interesting.
Yeah. No, I'm just as happy to keep going there. My grandfather Mackay married Jean Baptist of Three Rivers in 1871. My grandmother Baptist was the daughter of George Baptist, who was another one of the lumber barons who had their mills at Three Rivers or Trois Rivières at the St. Lawrence. There were several other big lumber barons in the St. Maurice Valley, and I think they were all multimillionaires, but as far as I can make out. My grandfather, he had 9 children, and my mother, Corrine, was the 8th in the line. She was born in 1885. You can see that though I have lots of Scottish blood in me, I have some Irish blood in me from the McElroy side of the family, and French blood from the Baptist. They were originally spelt with an E because they were from France originally. they were French Protestants, and so they were had to escape prosecution every now and then. They were known as Huguenots, and they eventually had to leave France and come to England. I have a story on the lighter side that I'd like to tell at this time. My father said they had an old maid, Scottish aunt, living with them in the house, and they used to tease her so much that she'd get annoyed and say she would tell their father. So anyway, she called them Irish devils. And she said, if I had one drop of Irish blood in me, I would cut the vein and let it out. You have some Irish blood in you, haven't you, Jean Noel?
Oh, possibly.
My parents were married in 1909 in Montreal and set up housekeeping in Rockland in a large, very large house. I have a picture of it here which you can look at after. It must have been quite a shock for my mother to come to Rockland, which was a mill town at that time. And she'd been born in pretty well high society in Montreal, living on a great big house on Sherbrooke Street. But she had a good friendship with the wives of the mill officials and was able to speak French with the townspeople. My sister Olive was born in 1910, followed by Janet in 1911, and Corrine in 1913, and then my brother Ralph in 1915. All this part of the family all lived in Rockland until 1918, when the mill was sold and the family moved to Ottawa. My sister Anna was born in 1918 in Ottawa, and I came along in 1921, and my brother Robert in 22, and the baby, the family Norma, was born in 1925 in our summer home in St. Andrews in Brunswick. The last of four members of the family might be considered a separate group, as the older group were pretty well off to school, and we were around the house, and we had a left in the care of a nanny. His mother was seemed to be very busy with her social work and the Federation of Liberal Women. Despite this, my mother, when she had time, she would read to us when we went to bed, and tried to keep Sundays open to socialize with the family. The house was pretty large, and we had a cook, a butler, and three maids, and a nanny to look after the younger ones, and a chauffeur. Our first nanny was Ingrid, a big Norwegian woman, followed by Eva, an English girl or woman, a very small one, but boy, I'm telling you, they were both disciplinarians and they thought nothing of smacking us around. But they were good enough at Christmas time, they gave us Christmas presents. I don't know if that was an antidote or something. When we were living in Sandy Hill, we used to in the big yard in the morning, and then in the afternoon the nannies would take us to walk to Strathcona Park or to go towards the canal and watch the trains going in and out of the station. We always thought that was a great treat. And quite often mother would take us on her errands around town when she was driven by the chauffeur. I was only 9 when mother was appointed to the Senate in 1930. And boy, I'm telling you, it was chaos around the house. In those days, people didn't use a telephone to contact people. They used a telegram. And the telegram boys were coming in a steady stream. Poor Betts, the butler there, he must have had sore feet from going to answer the door. That same year, we moved to the big house in Rockcliffe called the Manor House, which is now the residence of the Papal Nuncio. And we lived there, and then on the girls went to school at Elmwood. My brother Robert and I went to a little private school in New Edinburgh, and then went to Ashbury in 1933. It was only a short walk from where we lived in Rockcliffe. One day in 1931, my mother announced that I was to be a page. This did not mean a thing to me, but anyway, I soon found out. Clifford, the chauffeur, drove me to the Parliament buildings, and Mother introduced me to Lord and Lady Bessborough, the Governor General, and his wife. We were we were to take part in a rehearsal for the opening of Parliament. And Don McLaren and I, he's an old chum of mine, had the job to carry the Lady Vesper's train, which must have been about 15 feet long. A few days later, the opening took place, and it was a glittering spectacle with the cabinet ministers in the Windsor uniforms with silk stockings, white knee breeches, and dark tunics with lots of braid and bright buttons. The ladies were all dressed in full long evening gowns. Later in the year, there was the drawing room, where people, politicians and military people, bowed to their excellencies who were seated on two thrones. We had to take her train into that there and off the ground until she got seated. And also in those days, the debutantes were introduced to society at this affair, and after that they qualified as full members of society. That's all been done away with now. I don't think there's any more of that. The four of us and the younger ones used to eat separately from the older ones with our nanny. And then we went off to school. First we would go and see our parents and wish them good morning while they were still in bed. At supper time, Mother and Dad would be having tea in the library, and then we would have a chat with them then, because they ate a lot later than what we did. During all my young days, we went to St. Andrews, New Brunswick, to our summer place. This property was about 320 acres right on the sea. There was a small farm to supply the milk and eggs and vegetables. And there was two teams of horses for the farm and a single horse for the garden staff. Took seven men to look after the place in the summer. We were able to enjoy the saltwater bathing and to do all kinds of mischief around the farm. I used to help a carpenter. He got to be a good friend of mine, and I learned how to shingle rooms and do woodworking and various things like that. He came every summer to work around the place, and he always had lots of work to do. My father waged a war against mustard on the farm. He said when he first started that every grain field was yellow from side to side, but after about 15 years he could pick it all in about 5 minutes. And he'd hire 20 to 30 boys and girls at 20 cents an hour to come and pick this. We were all recruited for the job as well. And then we had to pick berries and deadhead the flower beds. When Mother had her tea parties, which were many, it seemed like we had to be dressed in our Sunday best and go and meet all the guests. I didn't like that job very much. Especially one lady who always called me Andy Gump there. I used to hate her there, even when I was quite small. Then every summer, Mother had one great big garden party. At this party, there would be summer visitors there, plus all the townspeople. They were invited as well, so it was a real mixture. And there were about 200 people came to this thing, so you can imagine that the cook and a few helpers had a busy time getting all the sandwiches and cakes and everything ready for this. And when I was about 13, we started having our Sunday lunch with the grown-ups. And it was quite interesting because Mother would ask all kinds of famous people for lunch, politicians and people in high spots in the government and very many famous women. I'll only list a few of them there. There was an Honorable Ernest LaPointe, who was Minister of Justice at the time, and his wife, Chubby Power, the Minister for Air at one point, J.L. Ralston, the Minister of Defense, and the Honorable Ian McKenzie, who had been Minister of Defense early in the game, and James Ilsley, who was Finance Minister, and a good number of senators and MPs. And even the women were not forgotten. Miss Elizabeth Scully was a frequent guest. And one of my sisters said, oh, this name Smelly doesn't sound very good, so she christened her Violet. And I remember when, after Mother died, there was a note came, and Mother's secretary was helping getting all the correspondence in order. And she said to me, who is Violet? Well, I said, that must be Miss Smelly. She signed her name that way. And she was, during the First War, she was quite well up in the nursing service, and in the Second World War, she was matron-in-chief. And she was also responsible for organizing the Canadian Women's Army Corps. And Mrs. Wingate, a widow of Brigadier Ord Wingate, who had a distinguished war career in Burma, came to visit us one time after the war. And I could name lots of others, but I don't want to bore you. Even at our Sunday home, our summer home, the Sunday lunch was a fairly grand affair too. And as we got a little older, we played golf and we had sailboats and lots of things to do there. It was a wonderful life, but Mother made sure we kept busy. She was the greatest one for finding jobs to be done. Getting back to Cumberland, I remember driving to the farm nearly every Sunday and other days as well, when there was still a cheese factory in front of St. Joseph's Church in Orleans, then past Donnie's store near the present trailer park, and the road hugged the side of the hill by the Princess Louise Falls, where Lindsay Ward has his house there now. And then past another cheese factory where the garage next to Miles Edwards' house is situated. Dad would be telling us all the names of all the farmers along the road, past McKean's store and a stop at Dunning's store, but not on Sunday, as the store was always closed. Leslie Dunning was an old friend of my dad, and each one of us would get a lollipop. Across from Dunning's store was a store with a sign, R.J. Kennedy, Star Cars. This, of course, was owned by the former treasurer of the township, Mr. R.J. Kennedy, the father of my good friend, Bus Kennedy. Then on to the farm. We went to see the cattle and the horses, and in the spring we used to take a sleigh ride up to the sugar bush and taste the new maple syrup. In May, my father was always on the rush to pick the asparagus before Uncle Reg or Aunt Lena got it. We often stopped to pick mint by the roadside near the Anglican church, and some of that mint was transplanted to Rockcliffe and St. Andrews and Brunswick. Most of us in the family were equestrians and would rent horses in Vanier and ride where Manor Park is. There wasn't hardly a house there in those days. And go along Overbay Road, which was just a mud track, and Searville and the area around the Montfort Hospital. These were all open areas at the time and wonderful for riding in. Mother was also an equestrian. She could, at that time, of course, she rode side saddle and was able to drive carriage horses as well. When I was over in Scotland, I met one of Mother's old nannies who had gone back to live in Scotland, and she told of one instance when Mother set out for Clarence, and seeing she was picking up a big party, she didn't take the coachman, George Reese, with her. So somebody spied her going through Rockland at a pretty fast clip there. The horses had run away on her. So he or she was smart enough to call down to Clarence, and they had a man standing out in the road to apprehend them when they came by. After I'd been to Ashbury until 1940, I spent a year at McGill, and then I joined the Army in Montreal. I joined the Royal Canadian Corps of Signals, and went overseas with the 5th Canadian Armored Division in 1941 in November. I was trained there to be an electrician signaler, which meant we looked after the radios and telephones and also kept the batteries charged for the radio sets. I was attached to the Westminster Regiment, which was from BC or just outside of Vancouver, where they were a mechanized infantry outfit, and I had the most enjoyable army time with them. Just about in the January 1945, I got transferred to division headquarters. And boy, I didn't like that place at all. It may have been a safe place, but the atmosphere around the place wasn't the same as where the danger was, I found. Then I came back to the farm after the war. I decided I was going to be a farmer, and I never regretted that I did. I married my wife, Alice Slinger, of Guelph in 1947, and in 1950, in January, we came to the little yellow house beside Peter Harkness's place, and that was where our first child, we had our first child born in that little house there. Forgot to mention that my mother died in 1962 and is buried beside my father in Dale Cemetery. Now I don't know if any of you know this book. I've checked it, it's in the library. This is a book about mothers. Quite interesting. If anybody wants to buy a copy, the author said she has quite a few of them on hand, and I can get them for you. I have a few pictures. Now here's a picture of the opening of Parliament. Now this is the Governor General and his wife there. I'll leave it here, you can look at it. This is a picture of me and my pages out there.
Here's
the longest. Oh boy.
I had two pairs of silk stockings on
there. Good for you.
Garter belt and everything to hold them up. Quite an outfit. And here's a picture of the home in Rockland, the Senator Edwards built it, of course, and then after he moved to Ottawa, my mother and father occupied it. And I have a few pictures, some of them not very good, of the Wilsons. I had a lot more pictures, but I couldn't find the darn things. There was the original first barn we had at the farm. And here's Senator Edwards in fancy dress at a ball at the Parliament buildings. There's my mother and father, I guess, in the early days of their... And here's my father, would be the young one, and Uncle Reg, when they're really small. This is George Wilson. And this one, let me see, I forget that one. Well, that's Fred Wilson, yeah. George Wilson was the one that took over the farm, or at least the post office. This is Uncle Charlie. He was in the military at one time. I never heard Dad talk about that, but this picture was taken in Aldershot, so I don't know what he was doing over there. And here's Aunt Kate Edwards. I can see she looks kind of a severe woman. This is my cousin, Eleanor Cameron. She and her sister, were Ida Cameron's, my aunt Ida's children. She died in childbirth when she had her second child there. Very big fella. This is my aunt Edith, at an earlier age anyway. I never knew her like that. She was pretty well, looked a lot older in my day. So I guess that's just about it then. Oh, I have some more pictures here. There's mother been sworn in at the Senate. There's my father. My mother again. My older sister, Olive and Corrine, and that's call his son James Gill, of course mother there. And here's my father, his favorite pastime on the golf swing side of that are curling. Oh, I have a picture I'll show you of the house at St. Andrews. There's my daughter Corrine when we opened and dedicated the basement of the church in Cumberland. There's a picture of the there's the our summer home down in St. Andrews, New Brunswick. From the flower garden there, the sea was on the other side of it.
Was the big hotel built then?
Oh yes, the hotel was, the hotel, the original one was a wooden building that my dad taught. That house was built in 1905.
But the one that's there now?
But, oh no, that hotel that's there now was built in 1914 or 15. The other hotel burned down and they rebuilt it in the shape it is now.
Angus, what about the Wilson Wharf? When was that last in use? I could remember
it being a great place to fish.
When I was young, in the 50s, you could still see the beams.
Yeah, I don't know when it was last used. I can't remember. It was before my...
It was...
Because the store was gone long before I ever came on this.
That wharf was situated...
Right in front of our house there.
In front of your house?
Yes. Do you remember there used to be a house there?
There was no wharf.
Well, I don't know. There may have been one up in the village, too. I'm not sure. Because the railroad never went through till 1912, so it was late in the game. So everything, like that.
Yes, but before our time, there must have been a big wharf someplace.
Oh, yeah, there could have been, yeah. Oh, yeah, because the boats used to go in there, didn't they? There must have been one there, but I think the present wharf, I heard some of the fellows claim, I think it was built around the 20s, I think it was, or maybe a little sooner than that. Somebody told me he worked on it, hauling the steel for it. But it was before my time. I'm not that old, John Noel.
No, but, you know, my grandfather got off the wharf here at Cumberland.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've heard Dad talk because...
1850 or something.
Oh, like I'm
that,
sure there wasn't a wharf there, because there's no other way to get there then unless you want to walk. And Uncle Willie, he had several yachts, and he used to stop in at Cumberland and pick up.
It might have been at the Wilson Wharf.
Well, it might have been. I don't know.
I'm going to be greedy and ask you to continue on from the Yellow House and ask you married. Oh, because I know only about the things that I've read since then.
That was my first episode in house construction. I hired a carpenter and we built it. And then we lived there for about 4 or 5 years. And the family started to increase in size. So the reason why we didn't move into the stone house, because they were talking about cutting off the whole front of the stone house to fix the road. And so we just decided to build something inexpensive that we could use for the time being, and that's what we did.
You talked about a sawmill.
Yeah.
How was this thing operated?
Steam.
Steam?
Yeah. Same as the big mill of Rockland, of course, it was a steam mill. I forgot to
mention
that.
The water power around here was pretty...
Well, we had no water power then.
No,
but they, like the big mill at Rockland, Dad said they had a 2-inch shaft, or was it bigger than that, and running through the mill, and everything was driven off the line shaft and driven off by belts. But I forgot to mention that there's a bridge on the Smith Road at Navan that was named after my grandfather. You know, there's a bridge there just beyond the United Church, a little piece there.
Oh, yes.
And that's the William Wilson Bridge. It was only built a few years ago.
Who were the families then that looked after the farm when no one was there? No, like the
H.N. Ranger was the
And the Barnetts also? Like,
yeah, the Barnetts, yes. Fred Barnett worked for Uncle Willie down to Rockland. And then when Dad bought the cattle, I guess he brought Fred with him. And the Laundrie family, well, there were several boys. You would know some of them, H. John Webb.
Yeah.
They worked there.
I knew one of them.
Yeah. He married in the barn, so he had all those connections. He used to come and help out quite often when they were busy. Dad used to talk about they had a steam engine to thrash and all that, and it was set up. And Uncle Reg, he said he'd be, when they were chopping the corn, he'd be cooking the cobs in the boiler.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's the kind of thing he would do. And then if he had a spare moment, he'd be making a flute. He could make a flute out of anything.
What were the names of your children?
My children? Well, there's Corrine, the oldest, and Joanna, the second girl, and Norman is sitting here in the back row there behind me, in that blue shirt there.
Bye-bye, Norman.
Yes, we just have three children.
Well, Angus, probably people have lots more questions for you, but I'll let you have a break.
Okay.
I'd like to thank you very, very much for coming out this evening. And in true Scottish tradition, I'm recycling this bag.
Oh, yeah.
And thank you very much. It's a small token for
you. Yeah, thank you very much.
Wonderful, wonderful presentation. Asking questions.
If anyone wants to see these photos here, please come forward.
I have the book.
Oh, you have, eh?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't read it. It's very, it's quite factual there.
Yeah,
I
want to see Angus.
Wow. You want me to sign your name for you, Mom?
Lady Mesbro is very good.
So,
you
did that. That was about a long speech.
That's the bust of my mother.
I think it's fantastic for a fellow to have the life that you had compared to the miseries that we had. You come and share this with us. Tonight, you know? See, you never came back after you asked me to come and see you, or at least you were coming to see me.
Yeah.
Why don't you do something about your memoirs?
Yeah.
So maybe I found out someplace else.
Well, maybe
I am writing.
Oh, it's torn down.
It's torn down. Whereabouts was that?
It was right on the hill overlooking the valley there, right at the river. The high hill.
Oh, no. When I went to school there, and was that there in 1935?
Around that time, they tore it down somewhere around there. See, the CIC about that, they were producing that.
The balance of the tape is background noise mostly. I'm going to cut it off here. I'm hopeful at some point that Angus will permit me to get the rest of his history, including when he